Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Hello, and welcome to the 5 Yard Fantasy Pod with me, Rich Cooling. Absolutely delighted to be releasing this to you guys. For those of you who've followed me across from Dynasty Island, hello and welcome back. For those of you who are listening for the first time, so I will be producing podcasts and writing articles focused mainly on Dynasty Fantasy Football, taking that kind of longer term approach. And looking at, you know, building rosters over years rather than a redraft mentality. The idea of this podcast is A, to grow a bigger audience for a fastly growing side of fantasy football in terms of dynasty football, but also to kind of help you guys think about and focus on kind of player values, buys, sells, kind of rise and falls and why that happens. One of my, I guess, kind of main focuses is around that player value piece, when to buy, when to sell, and trying to kind of ride the roller coaster of player values to reap the best rewards. So to get you guys kicked off today, I'm going to look back at kind of the 2020 season. We're going to look at the DLF ADP from August 2020, so just before the season kicked off. I'm going to identify perhaps some players or some groups of players that were too high or too low, and perhaps what we can learn from kind of looking back at their values and how we can take that into, you know, our rosters as we move into this off-season, but also into next year and startups and that kind of thing. So the first category that we're going to talk about, this is the young quarterbacks that were bumped up too early. So this is mainly focused around two guys, in terms of Carson Wentz, who is the QB7. So he was the 27th overall pick. And Baker Mayfield, who's the QB9, who's the 36th overall pick. You can also probably throw in a couple of others. You've got someone like Daniel Jones or Sam Darnold. But I'm just going to focus on these two. So this is, for anyone who's been following me for a little while, this is one of my kind of biggest bugbears in terms of dynasty. I think we're very much age-centric and kind of age-phobic, perhaps slightly, when it comes to running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, and I kind of get that to a point. But with the quarterback position, you know, when you've got guys who are able to play into their mid-30s, late-30s, even 40s now, I think we become a little bit obsessed with kind of raising up the value of these younger quarterbacks too quickly. You've got someone like Carson Wentz, Baker Mayfield, who have both shown flashes, you know, both shown that they can be kind of fantasy viable players. But I think to have them in the top 10 at this point last year was criminal. So looking back at the 2020 season, so Carson Wentz finished as the QB19 in points per game. Obviously, he's since lost his job. Who knows where he's going to end up next year, whether he's going to be indeed a starter or he could end up being a backup in Philadelphia if they're not able to move him. And then you've got Baker Mayfield. So he's actually the quarterback 27 in points per game. Yes, he's had a couple of nice stretches, a couple of nice games, but he's also been pretty woeful. And you certainly don't feel comfortable starting him in any given week. So he's if you take the whole season, he's actually the quarterback 17, but he has played every week, whereas obviously a lot of quarterbacks have missed a few weeks in and around there. So I just think that this is my thought process, is we're probably bumping these guys up a little bit too soon, too early. And I think that you can actually get some real good value from guys who are in their sort of mid to late 30s that are being, you know, thrown on the kind of scrapyard because of their age, but actually they're still, you know, got another 5 years of relevance. I think, you know, you look at current startups, you've got someone like Matt Stafford or Matt Ryan, who are still going to produce. You've even got a Ben Roethlisberger or Tom Brady who are going to produce for probably the next 2 years. This also probably leads me on to the next guy I want to talk about, and that's Aaron Rodgers. So in the startup ADP before the season, so he was going as the quarterback 14, so the 56th overall. So as you can imagine, he was going sort of 25-30 picks behind Carson Wentz and Baker Mayfield. Now, he's finished as QB4 on the season. He was fifth in points per game. I think he's, you know, definitely going to be in Green Bay next year. His contract is movable after the 2021 season. And obviously the Packers have just spent the first round pick on Jordan Love, so I do expect he'll be getting the crack at a starting gig there at some point in the near future, because I wouldn't think that Green Bay would want to waste his rookie contract. But I just think that this shows, you know, this is a guy that has proven to be an absolute fantasy stud when he's, you know, healthy and got a good offense. And yet he's being drafted after guys that have got significant question marks. And I just think that if we can perhaps take the age question and put it down a little bit down the order at quarterback, where it is less important, you know, we're not likely to be having the same quarterback on our roster in 5-6 years. So why do we need to worry about whether you're going to have that guy for the next 15? I always talk about building in dynasty in sort of 2-3 year windows. And well, I've just said Aaron Rodgers is going to be there for 2021, 2022. That's my 2-3 year window. If I can get elite production, you know, I'm very happy. Even guys in, you know, you look at someone like Tua, who's, you know, highly valued in current ADP, was obviously a high draft pick in terms of Superflex rookie drafts. Is there any guarantee he's going to be the quarterback in 2 years in Miami? Well, you know, at the moment, he's not able to complete games. And I think, yes, you know, he's still not fully back from his injury. And I do think he's going to be a good quarterback. I don't know if he's ever going to be a true kind of fantasy stud with the way he plays. But would you, in 3 years' time, would you be shocked if Aaron Rodgers was outproducing him and Tua was a career backup? You know, you wouldn't have expected Sam Darnold to be on the scrap heap at the end of this season 12 months ago. And I just think that I'd rather bank myself on kind of someone that's proven that they're, you know, fantasy relevant and is probably going to be in a position to be a quarterback in a year or two moving forward. I think I recently wrote on Twitter that there's currently 18 quarterbacks that I'd feel comfortable having as my QB1 or QB2 in startups. And I think that's, you know, that's never more kind of prevalent than this time of year. You're going to have a lot of people that are lusting after those rookie quarterbacks that haven't proven anything. I think, you know, you're still going to see Tua be going in the kind of top 4 or 5 rounds of Superflex startups. And I just think that for me, let's push the brakes on those a little bit, and I'd rather bet on a proven kind of performer than someone that's actually not done anything but just happens to be young. So the next group of guys that I want to talk about, so this is going to be again one of my bugbears. So these are the kind of older running backs. So As a person, I don't believe in kind of RB2s, if that makes sense, as a kind of a value play. And when I say RB2s, I'm not really talking, you know, outside the top 12. I'm probably talking running back sort of 15 to sort of 30 in terms of ADP. For me, I want either a truly elite kind of RB1 that's young, that's still got probably 2 years left on their contract, that is going to be, you know, a piece of which you can build your roster around, you know, in current situations, someone like a Jonathan Taylor or DeAndre Swift, someone like that. Or I just want to punt the position and look at back end backups and flyers and that kind of thing. I think for me, I'm very much a stars and scrubs kind of approach to the running back position. I think that if you're looking at people that are in that kind of RB2 mould, but don't have the elite upside of being a top 12 guy, but we're just putting in there because, yes, they're going to see some workload. So if I can give some examples where we were in August. So in August, there were 6 running backs in the top 36 who fitted the mould of ageing, i.e. approaching the end of their kind of rookie contract or on their second contract already, and with limited upside. So for those, I'd say it was Melvin Gordon, who was the running back 19 in ADP, Leonard Fournette, who was RB20, Todd Gurley, who was RB23, Le'Veon Bell, who was RB24, Mark Ingram, who was RB28, and Jordan Howard, who was RB35. Now, with all 6 of those guys, you can say there was a limit on their upside. They weren't going to be, you know, an RB1 probably this year. You can say that the only reason they were being drafted there was because of projected workloads. Well, projected workloads change super fast. You know, if you look at their finishes this year in terms of points per game, so Melvin Gordon was the RB27, Leonard Fournette RB35, Todd Gurley RB32, and then Lev Bell, Mark Ingram and Jordan Howard were all outside the top 50 in terms of points per game. So we were drafting them in the fifth, sixth rounds of startups to be RB2s or 3s on your roster, and you were basically saying, oh, well, I can pencil them in for, you know, 10 points a game. But to me, if you take that stars and scrubs approach, you can find 10 points a game from guys who are, you know, handcuffs that perhaps they're filling in for a week, or perhaps a third down back who gets an increased workload. I think those are the kind of players that you can find and pencil in. You know, at the beginning of the year, I was talking about Jeff Wilson as a massive, you know, pickup off your waiver wires because he had the opportunity. If he got a workload, he was going to produce. And I think those are the kind of guys that if you can have one or two elite running backs and then just fill your roster with maybe 10 to 15 flyers, if you want, for want of a better phrase, at running back, and I think that you're still going to be able to produce and find that 10 to 12 points a game that you're getting from the Melvin Gordons and people like that. So yeah, so for me, I think that if we can take that moving into next year, and I just think that I'm going to be avoiding those running backs that are perhaps coming to the end of their kind of contracts and on in a, you know, we aren't a truly elite performer like a Saquon or a CMC or a Kamara, but also those guys that perhaps aren't even that old but have just not got that true elite RB1 upside, someone like a Devin Singletary or something like that. So then moving on to the next group of players, so this is going to be the young wide receivers. So for this, it's kind of hard to look at this too critically. I think that, you know, with the younger wide receivers, it was an incredible year, and it's hard to say we underdrafted them as much as we did, because there's always that level of projection and you can't guarantee that they're going to break out. But the three I wanted to talk about, so DK Metcalf was the wide receiver 14, Calvin Ridley was the wide receiver 16, and Justin Jefferson was the wide receiver 28. Now, all three of those finished as top 10 wide receivers in terms of points per game this year. But you could also throw a number of other guys in the mix. You've got AJ Brown, CeeDee Lamb, T. Higgins. They were all, you know, essentially absolute bargains at their price in August. And I just think that, you know, this is a point of, yes, we should be kind of valuing these wide receivers. We should be getting in on these wide receivers as early as possible. But the breakout's hard to predict. You know, there's no guarantee I'm going to sit here and say, yeah, go out and buy young wide receivers. But you might end up with a, you know, a Jalen Reagor or a Bryan Edwards and people like that who I still perhaps believe in, but not kind of broken out as of yet. And then the final, I guess, person that I want to talk about is Michael Thomas. So if anyone listened to me this time last year or certainly read anything that I'd wrote, I was calling him an absolute screaming sell at his value. He was the wide receiver one overall. He was being drafted in the first round of startups as the seventh overall player in Superflex. And I just couldn't see how, unless he produced another record-breaking year, he was going to return any level on kind of the investment you happen to pay for him. I just think that he had a questionable QB situation. He had, you know, he was getting up there in sort of age and into his 28th season. And I just think that he was perhaps going to struggle to perform up to the level that he did. And That was proved. Obviously, he had a difficult year with injuries. You know, he had some perhaps off the field issues. I know he supposedly punched someone in training, but then, you know, there's those quarterback questions rose again. Obviously, Drew Brees had the injuries. He had a few games where he played with Taysom Hill. Now, he saw an obscene target share. I think he was upwards of sort of 40-50% in the couple of games that he played with Taysom Hill. And people might say, well, that proves that he can still produce next year if Taysom Hill is the quarterback. Or, to me, that's just unsustainable. You know, you look over the last 10, 15 years in terms of target share, the truly elite guys are pushing maybe 30%. Nobody is going to be able to sustain 40 to 50% target share across a whole year. So I just think, for me, I'd be wary paying the price in startups of that truly kind of elite wide receiver one if we're tying them to a quarterback that's getting up there and tying them to a situation that they've had a record-breaking year. Yes, this is me perhaps hinting towards Devontae Adams as being a slight sell candidate as we head into to next season. I think he's probably going to be fantastic in 2021, but if Jordan Love came in and took over the quarterback position in 2022, are we still going to be expecting Davante Adams to be, you know, on that record-breaking pace? So that's kind of it for me. It was just our idea was just to give you a little bit of a kind of an introduction into me, what I'm going to do, what I'm going to talk about through the off season. The idea for this podcast is going to be get lots of guests on. We're going to be doing, you know, talking through some buys and sells through the off season. We're obviously going to get you geared up and preps for your rookie drafts. Talking a lot about the rookie guys. It's, you know, going to be a fascinating class coming in at all four kind of main positions. There's some really exciting prospects. And we will start talking through some kind of startup strategies and that kind of thing. I'll be doing a weekly podcast, but you can also check out, there'll be multiple articles coming out a week throughout the off-season, covering pretty much everything. So you can follow me on Twitter, I'm at Dynasty Island. You can also follow the podcast, which is at 5 Yard Dynasty. Thank you very much for listening, and I will speak to you again next week.